I can't think of anybody more important. I can't think of anybody I'd rather talk to right now than our friend, our pal, our buddy, the senior hockey writer and NHL insider from Sportsnet for this program, who I'm excited to say has a new sponsor starting next week. Chris Johnston joins us. How are you?
I'm doing great, Rob. How are you?
I am well. I am very well. Attended the press conference here in Calgary this morning for the Olympic team. This is a story that you and I have talked about ongoing now for about 2 years. It kind of hit home for me today. I think, you know, I said to Pat earlier, I think it's time to kind of, you know, put on hold all the debate and the merits about best on best and what this should be and who should be there and all those sort of things, and just kind of embrace the moment and what it meant for these 25 young men and older men, I guess, too. What did you make of the announcement today?
Well, I mean, it's just awesome. You can appreciate, if you dig in, even just some of the players we know a little bit about, for those of us that follow the NHL closely, what it must be like to get a call like they got yesterday from Sean Burke or, you know, one of the guys working for Hockey Canada, you know, that they got the go-ahead to play for the Olympics. I mean, for most, if not all, the players, I would say this will be the highlight of their careers professionally and the culmination of all the work they put in to reach, you know, the pretty high level of the sport. So I'm with you. I don't think there's much more reason, I guess, to dig into the NHL or talk about that. We know what the team looks like. I don't think we really know how they're going to play or what's to come in terms of their competition. But now we know what Team Canada is, and you know, it's a pretty interesting day for those guys. You know, probably at this point in their careers, never could have guessed this was what was going to happen.
You know, I guess I get caught up in the day in, day out minutiae and you know, kind of covering stories as they go along. And sometimes you got to take a step back. And it was really Richard Deitch from Sports Illustrated that kind of reminded me about what Olympics are supposed to be. He did a roundtable on his podcast talking about what NBC's coverage might look like and not having the NHL players there. And all of his, you know, the people around his table were saying, this would be great because it's all about stories. You're a writer by trade. You're a reporter by trade. This is actually, for an Olympics, pretty good thing, right? There's lots of stories here. We knew all the NHL players going over there. That was never really the fertile ground that this becomes for reporters and the media heading to a Games.
Yeah, I'm quite jealous of my colleague Shai Davidi, our normal baseball writer at Sportsnet, who's, you know, going to cover this event, because I think it's going to be awesome. I really do think the stories there will be tremendous. And, you know, for me, you know, I've been to just the two Olympics in Vancouver and Sochi. But it was by far, you know, it's 1-2 and right through 10 in terms of the best experiences I've had professionally. And I think it's much the same no matter what role you fill, if you're there to coach or even sell peanuts, honestly, at an event. You feel like you've made something of your life if you get to the Olympics and you're, you know, in the center of it all. And you know, I still think the hockey tournament without NHL players will have, you know, pretty good viewing numbers. I think there'll be a lot of conversation about it. Especially if Canada does well, you know, it's hard to know what will happen if it goes not the way anyone's hoping, and then they just lose a couple games and it's more of a whimper. But if they have some amount of success, you know, I think that we'll hear a lot more stories about these guys. And, you know, it helps that we're on a first-name basis, probably with half of them. You know, a number of players that have not just spent time in the NHL, but spent a pretty significant amount of time. And, you know, we know where they've been, but don't know where they're at today. You know, they have a chance to do something special and going over there and adding to Canada's Olympic history and lore. And, you know, it was a long dry spell, but, you know, any way you cut it, we have 3 of the last 4 gold medals in men's hockey, and those guys are trying to keep that up.
Is there, in your travels, and I guess I'm kind of contradicting myself and maybe being a little hypocritical in asking this question, but in your travels around the NHL, is this a tournament that will be scouted? This is not what it was in the early 80s and 90s where the national team produced NHL players after an Olympics, but is there the possibility that NHL clubs might find some players in this tournament?
If I'm being honest, that's a question I'm still trying to answer myself.
Okay.
Still trying to get a clear picture on. You know, a number of the European teams still haven't named their rosters, and that's going to come within the next week here. And so I don't know, you know, really what we're dealing with. I mean, if you look at the Canadian team, most of them are committed to KHL clubs at this point or playing in Switzerland or Sweden or Germany. I believe Chris Kelly might be the only player on the team that doesn't, you know, he's on a PTO with the American Hockey League with Belleville, but, you know, would theoretically be able to sign an NHL deal if one emerged during the tournament. But, you know, I think it will be scouted. I just don't have a picture on how many players we're realistically talking about as possibilities. But, you know, I think anything is possible. It's certainly going to be watched closely. And you know, teams, you know, at this time of year, it'll manifest itself mostly in trades. But, you know, adding a little bit of depth, adding a player that you feel can, you know, maybe fill a role if you have three injuries. I mean, there's a chance that we'll see someone play in this tournament and play in the NHL games afterwards. But, you know, I don't yet have a total idea just how many guys, you know, fit into that conversation and what exactly we're looking at.
Yeah, I was just more interested. I wasn't even thinking about post-tournament. I was thinking about even next year invites and those types of things. You never know. I mean, you just got to let it play itself out. It's funny how, you know, GMs around the league and scouting directors around the league seem to be looking under every rock. So it's not out of the realm of possibility, to say the least.
Well, look at Jeff Glass. I mean, yep. This guy played seven right. years, I think it was, in the KHL. And, you know, is now, you know, making a lot of starts for the Chicago Blackhawks. I mean, no one would have been predicting that outside of, you know, himself. Elliot Friedman had a nice piece on his 31 thoughts about, you know, the visualization work that Jeff's done, you know, in terms of believing in himself and thinking this day would come. I mean, if you're on that Olympic team, you know, you've done pretty well still with your life. And you are definitely in a situation where people will be watching you play even more than normal. And I do think that it's a possibility. Certainly we're going to see guys in that game that soon play in the NHL, you know, afterwards. It's just about whether it be immediate or take a few years.
He is Chris Johnston from Sportsnet joining us down the South Street Burger Guest Hotline. When last we spoke, we were talking about the Chicago Blackhawks, and they sat out Seabrook for a game. He came back in and he scored, but they also made a trade as they picked up Anthony Duclair yesterday from Arizona. Anything, I mean, no money exchanges hands, you know, kind of struggling forward with a couple of minor leaguers thrown in there. Anything else that draws your attention to this deal?
Well, it speaks to, I think, you know, really how displeased Arizona was with Anthony Duclair and him with them that the deal gets made, because, you know, in this deal, they're getting, you know, Chicago's getting a younger player. They're getting a cheaper player in terms of the salary cap commitments and giving themselves a little bit more flexibility on the cap. And you know, I think that they're doing it, you know, largely because the Coyotes didn't have anything else out there better, you know, offer-wise for Anthony Duclair. And, you know, he's still, you know, very young guy, 22 years old, had a 20-goal season early on there, but, you know, there wasn't a fit. And, you know, that's what stands out to me most, is that, you know, it appears that Chicago is getting the better end of this because they're, you know, able to shed a bit of contract and get a younger guy. And, you know, it's one problem for another, in a sense, because Richard Ponick has had a tough season this year, you know, after, you know, scoring 22 goals last year and getting an extension in the summertime. And yet, you know, I think the risk, you know, comes in some of the ways that we don't see and that, you know, aren't measured by money, but whether he can fit in. You know, I think when the one benefit you have when you have a team that's won as much as Chicago's won over the last 10 years and you have veterans like you have, is there's a comfort factor in bringing any type of player into your locker room and expecting them to fit in, just because the culture is so defined there. So, you know, it's pretty clear to me that Chicago sees this as a gamble worth making on a young player with skill and, you know, at the same time are in a better position today than they were yesterday to make a deal with someone else as a trade deadline gets closer.
What do we make of John Chyka? Just kind of checking in. I mean, obviously a lot of conversation about him becoming the youngest general manager by a long shot last year. The team, again, struggling this year. Lots of prospects, we think. But what do you make of the work that he has done in his, you know, almost 18 months at the helm in Arizona?
Well, personally, I still think it's hard to assess him because, you know, I need to see a little bit more myself. I mean, look, the one thing I'll say to his credit in being put in this position at a young age is he's shown that he's unafraid to make bold moves. He's made more trades than any of his peers in the time that he's been there. I think the next question will come, well, what are those trades amounted to yet? And I think that's where it's difficult to assess what he's been able to do. I mean, it's a tough situation where you've got uncertain ownership. You have cash flow issues at times or money questions anyway about the future of the franchise. And, you know, you're trying to build something from scratch. And at the same time, you're also learning. And you know, he did spend time in their front office, you know, working under Don Baloney and in an assistant capacity before ascending this job. But, you know, there's almost a grace period. I mean, maybe his boss doesn't see it that way, but, you know, for those of us trying to handicap what he's done, I feel like it's only fair to give him some time to see how some of these moves play out. So I think it's very much a work in progress. You know, I don't know if I can point to any one thing with him other than I do think it counts for something when you become the youngest NHL GM in league history that you're making so many deals and obviously working the phones with your peers and getting to know how things work. And, you know, you're going to make mistakes as any GM does at times, but, you know, at some point they have to build upwards and they seem to amass a decent prospect pool. And then we'll see what else John can do here ahead of the trade deadline. But, you know, this year, certainly he had hoped they'd be winning more games. And, you know, as a result of them not, I think that he's in a bit more of a position to sell off once more and then it isn't nailed down.
But what could he sell? I'm just looking at the roster. You know, there's some, you know, players like Derek Stepan still have 4 years at 6.5. I don't think you're moving him. I don't think you're moving Alex Goligoski with 4 years at 5.4. I know Brad Richardson name has come up. Is there much else to move there? Because you're not going to – he wouldn't be moving his kids, right?
Well, that will be the interesting question. I think he's in a position where he can at least think about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where, you know, a player that maybe hasn't come along as fixed. I mean, Dylan Strome is the most obvious example of someone where, you know, they used a very high pick on him. He's bounced up and down from the AHL and NHL and – you know, this is more us talking than, you know, anything news-based in terms of reporting. But, you know, maybe if there's a time in there to think about moving some assets like that because, you know, you only need so many prospects. I think, you know, as time goes along, you have a feel for what certain things are. I mean, it is a difficult spot for him at this time. It's not obvious pieces to move. I mean, last year we knew Martin Hansel was going to be a trade that they had to make at the deadline with his contract expiring and the fact that he was an asset that other teams coveted. And, you know, I think John Trecka did quite well in the trade he made with the Minnesota Wild for Martin Hansel. But, you know, they've run thin on those type of players, the obvious rental types to get moved. But, you know, given how aggressive he's been, I wouldn't be surprised to see him dabble in some different kinds of trades as it goes along because they have really amassed a lot of prospects and made a lot of picks. And, you know, at some point it does have to scale up. And, you know, for them, I think some of it lies in the luck they have in the lottery because, frankly, they haven't had very good luck. And, you know, if they get Rasmus Dahlin, you know, maybe we're talking about a different thing and we're probably talking about an Oliver Ekman-Larsson trade again and, you know, those type of things if they're able to replace through the draft that way.
Chris Johnston from Sportsnet, our guest on the Sustreeburger guest hotline. We don't have to dwell a lot on it, but it's official today. The Carolina Hurricanes have new ownership. Are you sensing anything for this club, for Ron Francis's team? Is there going to be some infusion into hockey ops and cash and things like that? Are they going to have to sell off to become lean? Does the ownership affect anything that's going on the ice in Carolina?
Well, the biggest place I think it's going to have an impact right away is the enthusiasm in the front office and around the team. You know, I know that with Peter Karmanos, that the last couple of years have been very difficult, you know, with the team being up for sale and him really not wanting to spend any money they didn't have to spend. And you know, I'm talking about things beyond players. It's even just marketing the team and you know, spending a little money in an effort to try to make some money in terms of ticket sales and promoting, you know, the product that they have. And, you know, this is a welcome sign. I mean, it remains to be seen on some level what Thomas Dundon is as an owner. But you know, what we know as he comes into this job is that he's got a lot of money and he's a young guy. He's done well in other businesses, isn't afraid in his own right to be aggressive. And I would think you'll see more money for hockey ops. But if nothing else, I think there's a new lease on life for longtime employees of that team who felt like they haven't leveraged themselves enough. And, you know, they are still hanging around the playoffs. I mean, maybe this will be the year, you know, with a strong last 35 games or whatever they have left, that they're able to make that push and get back to the playoffs. And, you know, I think that would do a lot for it, too. So it's a big day for the folks in Raleigh. And, you know, I know that they felt like they've kind of been dangling out there without much hope. And, you know, at the same time, they get this new owner. They do have a team that does appear to be trending in a good direction.
Another news story from the last 24-hour news cycle, and I'm going to ask you the same question I asked a couple people around here yesterday. Nashville-Edmonton two nights ago, looks like a tying goal for the Oilers, called off. Nobody likes that call. Two-parter for you. One, does this force the National Hockey League once again to look at the rule the way it's written to maybe try and clear this up? And two, how important was it that Connor McDavid kind of spoke up in this case? Because I think this league has a history of its premier players having to have a voice at the table. I just wonder if it was significant what happened a couple of days ago from that regard in Nashville.
Well, I think it changes the entire conversation for Colin Campbell, and you know, when he meets with the general managers. And you know, last year, Colin, who's at the very top of the hockey ops department, had pushed for this exact change, that skates off the ice. He wanted them to be considered, as though it's a player onside. I mean, especially in the case we're dealing with, Jujhar Khaira, there's no question he's onside, except for the fact that his left skate's in the air. I mean, there's no debate about that point. And you know, I think that when you're able to slow the video down and challenge these things, you know, Colin Campbell's point is right. That's not really the spirit of the original rule as it was intended when, you know, referees are viewing this in real time and not having the ability to take it down to a slow-mo replay. So I think it's a huge moment with Connor speaking out, because it gives him a little bit more ammunition to go back at it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I do think that there is a degree of pressure there. I mean, ultimately, the power for these type of changes initially resides with the general managers. And, you know, it'll be up to them about whether this changes. And last year, not all of them were in favor of that. Peter Chiarelli, in fact, was one. The Oilers general manager was fine with it staying the way it was and didn't see need for change. Maybe his view will be a little different now that his franchise player is speaking out about it and it's affected his team. And, you know, I think that there's at least a decent chance that, you know, we see some kind of change made here. I guess the only one thing, and I hate to be a Debbie Downer on this, because, you know, I'm all for making these kind of common sense changes, especially ones that maybe don't slow the game down quite as much as these replays do. But, you know, when the skate is off the ice, there could be a scenario where it's tougher to tell definitively if it is onside or not, you know, for a play that isn't quite this one. And, you know, I would be somewhat concerned that maybe you're introducing inadvertently, you know, another type of play just with angles and everything where it's not entirely clear if something is onside or offside. But, I do know there's a pretty significant push at the top levels of the NHL to try to change this rule, and we'll see if the GM's obliged a month or so from now.
I think the point you raise is a good one, which allows me to say something I've said for many, many, many years. I think they still have to do a better job of using the American Hockey League to vet these things, to try them out, and to see if they're going to work. And they dink and they dunk around it, but that you should have vetted it first to see. It's always unintended consequences. It's always adaptation. How do coaches adapt to it? What happens if we don't? I mean, the whole idea of fishing for something after a goal, they had to put a minor penalty in. Why couldn't they have figured that out before? I digress. I'm taking up some of your valuable time. Chris?
Well, no, but it comes down to money too, Rob.
Yeah.
They don't have the right video technology probably in all those AHL buildings and people to staff it. And, you know, I mean, we love this game and we love the people in it, but we're still not truly major league on every major thing, I think. And stuff like this, it kind of shows through.
A couple of days to go before you'll be on Hockey Night in Canada headlines, and I don't want to be the guy that asks you to give them out 2 days early, but as you get prepared for this, what are you hearing out there? I know Pittsburgh was antsy to do something. Edmonton's kind of interesting to watch. Are there teams getting active? Are there teams getting close to doing something out there?
Well, there's definitely lots of conversation. I think one of the issues, you know, some teams have found is that they don't entirely know if they want to expend assets to get rental players. And you know, largely we're talking about rentals at the deadline just because of uncertain playoff positioning. And that's one thing that stands out to me, you know, looking at the standings is a lot of teams are a will we or won't we kind of scenario. And I think especially when we're this far from the deadline, you know, it's tough to justify expending future assets if you have a team that doesn't end up making the playoffs. It's a little harder to go to your owner, your boss, your president, you know, depending on the setup of the front office. To be too bold right now, I also believe there's still a limited number of sellers to some degree, you know, where they can ask higher prices. You know, if you want a Vander Kane today, it costs this, but, you know, that price will be different if he's still a member of the Buffalo Sabres on February 24th and you're down to the final minutes, I mean, depending on who's bidding on it. So, you know, there is a sense certainly around the league we're having a lot of conversation, but you know, I still feel as though we're going to have to wait for the real fireworks, so much as a surprise here, that someone's not talking about at the moment.
Great stuff as always. Chris, enjoy your weekend. We'll catch up with you again next Tuesday.
Thank you, Rob. Take care, bud.